Happy Independence Day, Graham Church. Aren't you thankful for air conditioning? I am. It's good to be here and be with you. The Lord loves to hear you sing and to sing to His glory. We are in Daniel chapter 6 this morning, page 743 in the Bibles that are under the seats, and we'll begin reading in just a moment. It is vacation season. You can tell a lot of people are gone. Some people are just getting back, and some of you are leaving this week. And as you go, or if you're staying here, I wonder, what does the person next to you on the plane or at Big B or shopping in Meijer, what does that person next to you believe about God? What do they believe about life? What do they believe about getting to heaven if they think there even is one? Well, in 2018, it could be just about anything at all, because this is not your grandfather's country. It's a pretty eclectic place. There are peoples of all different kinds from all kinds of different belief systems who live here with us. Daniel lived in a society that celebrated a multitude of different gods and religions, and yet he thrived. That is, until he didn't. Until his commitment to the one true God became a big problem. How do you live, if you are a believer, in only one true God in a pluralistic society, a culture that is committed to the idea that there are many gods and many religions and many moralities? Daniel chapter 6, and I'm going to begin reading in verse 1. And it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them three high officials, of whom Daniel was one, to whom these satraps should give account, so that the king might suffer no loss. Then this Daniel became distinguished above all the other high officials and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Then the high officials and the satraps sought to find a ground for complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom. But they could find no ground for complaint or any fault, because he was faithful and no error or fault was found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God." Then these high officials and satraps came by agreement to the king and said to him, "O King Darius, live forever. All the high officials of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps and the counselors and the governors are agreed that the king should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction that whoever makes petition to any god or man for 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked." Therefore, King Darius signed the document and the injunction. When Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber opened toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. Verse 16. Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, "May your God whom you serve continually deliver you." And a stone was brought in and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. Then, at the break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. As he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, "Oh, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Then Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God has sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me because I was found blameless before him, and also before you, O king, I have done no harm." Then the king was exceedingly glad and commanded that Daniel be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no kind of harm was found on him because he had trusted in his God. This is the word of the Lord. We're going through the whole story of the Bible in 2018, seeing how it's all one story. In Genesis to Revelation, this whole book is pointing to one person. The Bible is all about Jesus, cover to cover, both Old Testament and New Testament. And there are few people in this book who point more clearly to Jesus than does Daniel. Daniel was an exile, so was Jesus. Daniel lived a righteous life, so did Jesus. Daniel prayed a lot, so did Jesus. Daniel faced adversity for his love for God, so did Jesus. Daniel was asked to make the ultimate sacrifice because of his faith in God, so did Jesus. So you see, this book bearing Daniel's name is not telling us how great Daniel is. It points out how great is his God. So how does Daniel live in this world as a believer in the one true God? We see here three marks that characterize his life. One, he lives missionally. Two, he doesn't assimilate. And three, he points to ultimate rescue. So the first two tell us how Daniel lives in the world around him. And the third one points to what it means, tells us what this all means. Number one, Daniel lives missionally. How does Daniel live in the world as a believer in the one true God? He lives missionally. This is describing the way he lives, the way he engages his world around him. Missional living means I view my life as a Christian, that I am sent by God on mission. Missional means God is on mission, and he calls us to join him on mission. All believers, all of us. Missionaries are not a separate special category, but it's describing all Christians, all of us. To think missionally means that we realize that the Bible is describing the mission of God, and being a Christian is joining in the mission of God. In the place where I am, me as a Christian, where I live, where I go to school, where I work, and all the time as a lifestyle. That's what missional living is for all Christians. So thinking missionally means that I realize that missions is not just something that I fund with my giving on Sunday. It's not just something that I pray for. Missions is what I am called to do as a Christian, to share God's good news and to seek the good of my community. We're sent by God to speak the good news, to verbally share what Jesus Christ had done in the death, burial, and resurrection, to share the good news, but also to do good. So in other words, part of our sending assignment as Christians is that we do things to fix this broken world, to help broken people. I think we'd all agree that talk is cheap. You can say what you want. But God doesn't just send us to talk. He sends us to live in the kingdom, to intentionally connect with other people, to serve our neighbors, to help them with their homework, to adopt a hurting child, to help an international student or refugee get adjusted, to mow a widow's lawn, to drive someone to the doctor, to cross racial barriers, to listen to your enemy and find out what's bugging them, to show grace where it's not deserved. So living missionally means I get involved in lives around me, but it also means I live counterculturally with distinct values and loves from the world around me. The church is a contrast community. Christians are distinct from the world, not necessarily distinct in the way that I dress. People around me dress just like I do, just dress just like you do. Not necessarily in the music that I listen to, but in our heart, the things that we love, the things that we treasure, the things that the way that we live together as believers, the quality, distinctiveness, and beauty of our lives together as Christians is a major part of our witness. So people see how we live together as Christians, and we know that there's something attractive about Jesus Christ and his gospel. And so Daniel is an example of what Jesus tells us, that we are to be the salt of the earth. And you want to know what that expression, what that metaphor means? You look at Daniel's life. Don't separate from the world. Engage it. The Bible, yes, it's true that the Bible tells us not to buy into the world's belief system, not to become part of the world apart from God. But the Bible also is clear that Christians, we as Christians are not to isolate ourselves, to live monastically, to live so apart from the world that we don't have any non-Christian friends, to live so apart from the world that we don't know people who are unbelievers. We are to be engaged with the world. And we are to be in the world, as Jesus says, in the world, but not of it. And you see that in Daniel. Daniel has a job. He has a government job. He's high up in the Persian government structure. And he is so successful in what he does in his job and what he does for the king that he keeps getting promotion and promotion and promotion. And people envy him. Now, the reason this is happening is because Daniel had taken seriously the command of God that came through the prophet Jeremiah. And Jeremiah gave very clear instructions what people were to do when they ended up in exile in Babylon. Jeremiah chapter 29. Jeremiah said, when you get there, you are to move in. You are to become engaged in the life of the community around you. You are to keep a distinct identity as my people. And you are to work and pray for the welfare of the community. Don't isolate yourself from the community around you. And don't assimilate yourself with them. Don't be subversive, but be distinct, but actively involved there. So look at Daniel's life. Look at the way that he does his public work as a bureaucrat who has been very successful vocationally. Verse 2, that the king might suffer no loss. He's not working for his own advancement. He's not working for his own tribe. He's working for the king. He's working for the city. He's working with an excellent spirit that was within him. A smart, classy guy. He's got integrity. He was faithful, and no error or fault was found in him. Now, what's amazing is Daniel had been serving both under the Babylonian system and then later on under the Persian system. He was successful in both. And arguably, and I'm not getting into politics, but arguably, you could say, I just can't stand the former president. I can't stand the present president. You know, I don't like one or the other. I don't like either one of them. Daniel was under two vastly different political systems with two vastly different philosophies of how government ought to be run, and he prospered in both because he took seriously the command of God to go and work for the good of the community around you. And Daniel is incorruptible. That is really remarkable because Daniel is functioning in a system where bribes and kickbacks are the norm. This is just what was expected. He's diligent and he's disciplined and he's conscientious and he's got a great character and he is effective. He's not just a man of integrity. He's a man of integrity who works well. It's not a whole lot of help to your company if you're honest, but you can't get your job done well. And Daniel does that. He's effective and he is exceptional. Now, what's striking about this is when the first exiles came from Israel to Babylon, here's what goes wrong. They land in Babylon. They've been kidnapped. They've been transported hundreds of miles away from home. And so what do? They isolate themselves. They stay out of the city. They move into their own little Jewish enclaves. And they're saying to themselves, Well, you know, we don't want to lose our distinctive identity as God's people, so we've got to be separate, and we don't want to mingle with those pagans out there, and we don't want to get corrupted by those pagans, so we're going to separate ourselves and be so distinctly different that nobody's going to be corrupted by the world around them. Not Daniel. Daniel obeys the command of the prophet, Jeremiah, and he gets deeply engaged and moves right on up in the pagan government, and everybody knows what he stands for. The window to his bedroom is open. I mean, everybody can see into his prayer closet, and they know exactly what is the treasure of his heart and who he worships and what he really finds important. He's looking toward the city of God. He's praying toward Jerusalem. Daniel hides nothing. He's the salt of the earth kind of guy. You know, salt doesn't just disperse. Salt doesn't just flavor. In the ancient world, salt was used as the main source of preservation. It was a preservative. They didn't have freezers that they could throw things. They didn't have means of canning like we do today. They used salt to keep things from falling apart and from decaying. And so Daniel goes out into the place where God put him and poured his life into being the salt of the earth, making Persia, a better place. Now let's apply this for a moment. Do you have to move away from Central Michigan in order to live missionally? Do you have to move away from where you grew up and where you have your job and where you've raised your... Do you have to in order to be a missionary? Can God use you in an effective way here? What you see in Scripture is that some spiritual people go away. And I thank God for Katie and for Gabriel and Rachel and for the Alchins and other people who have left here and gone to other places. But some people, spiritual people, go away. Some stay. And some are all sold out for God in the place and calling that the Lord gives them. We need to get rid of the idea that in order to be truly useful for the kingdom of God, you have to sell everything you own and move away to a foreign culture and plant churches. I love foreign missionaries. I love foreign missionaries. God calls us to send people to go and to financially support people who go. And God calls us to stand behind them 100%. And God calls some of you to go. Some of you to go. He calls some of you to stay and to be senders. And God will deeply reward people who forsake family relationships and sacrifice home and everything. God will deeply reward those who go. But that doesn't mean that for all of us, we are somehow less spiritual if we stay and pour out our hearts and our lives into this place right here where God put us. You must never think that in order to be really godly, that you have to be a pastor here at home, or you have to be a missionary on the foreign field overseas. Ministry, you see, is serving God and others wherever you are right now. Ministry doesn't start when you move. Ministry doesn't start when you get that degree or start another opportunity in another place. Ministry starts wherever you are right now, with whatever gifts you have, with whatever training you have, whatever circumstance God has put you in. Daniel, you see, Daniel's an amazing guy. Daniel has all the gifts to be in Isaiah. He has all the tools to be a Jeremiah. Daniel has the gifts of revelation from God. He definitely has extraordinary gifts of leadership. He has all the gifts to be a full-time prophet, but he isn't. He is a government bureaucrat. Daniel has a secular job. He's part of the bureaucracy. He helps open the world to the kingdom of God from a government posting. Think about this. Daniel is no second-class citizen of God's kingdom. He's on ministry. He's on the ministry front lines working in a government office. Now, where did he do this? Where did Daniel do this extraordinary thing? The last place in the world you might expect to find a thriving Christian ministry, Persia. Persia, which is known for its polytheism and multiculturalism and pluralism. They believed in lots of gods. You take your pick. You're okay as long as you don't say that my God is better than your gods. You're fine in Persia. Where do you put salt? By the way, in the ancient world, where did you use salt? You used salt where things were rotten, where things were going to decay, where things were going bad. And here's Daniel in a very dangerous place doing the work of ministry from inside of a government office. God often sends his people to live in places that are not safe, where things are falling apart because we are salt. Maybe you ought to ask yourself, can I live missionally in an environment that is ugly, in an environment that is decaying? What if you work in a shop that devalues godliness, that devalues integrity, that laughs at fidelity to marriage vows, that belittles faith in God? Well, what if you work in that kind of a place? What if you work in an office where nobody cares about spiritual things at all, or so it seems? Consider that maybe God placed you there to be a light, to be salt, to do kingdom work. And you are following in Daniel's steps. You are following in Jesus' steps because Jesus is a true and ultimate Daniel. And God the Father sent his Son into the world, into an ugly and dark and rotten and decaying place to do missional work. And he sends us. Daniel lives missionally. Number two, what made Daniel able to live in this extraordinary place and do so successful? Number two, Daniel doesn't assimilate. Daniel doesn't assimilate. Now, there's a word that we might need a dictionary definition, so I looked it up. What is assimilation? Assimilation, cultural assimilation, quote, is the process in which a minority group or culture comes to resemble those of a dominant group. A minority group or culture comes to resemble those of a dominant group. So you're no longer distinctive. You're no longer different. You become like the majority. Daniel moves into a leadership in Persian culture, but he doesn't become Persian. He's distinctively Jewish. He's distinctively a God-fearer. Daniel doesn't become like everyone else and the things that they love and the things that they value. And that cost him. Daniel is very strange. And you can see he ends up taking heat because of this. Because rejection of God by people of the world is unavoidable and it's inevitable. Look what happens to Daniel. He lives with tension his whole life. His lifestyle is consistently good. He's habitually honest. And yet, people hate him. They find him threatening. He doesn't have to go looking for opposition. It comes to him. By the way, people don't need an excuse to hate Christ and to hate his people. And don't you dare give them one. It'll come to you. So why are Daniel's co-workers so upset? They're upset because Daniel has excelled so much that he is going to promote Daniel. And so they're thinking, we got to do something. We got to stop this. So they try to dig up dirt on Daniel. They can't find any. They think, they think that Daniel is like them. They think that Daniel has achieved success because he's like them. He's bought off other people. He cheated. He's lied. They're sure that they can dig up dirt on him, and they can't find any. We thought that he was like us, and he's getting ahead. Now we see that he's not like us, and we hate that. We hate that. You see here that the world just simply can't understand Christians. Tim Keller says, we are irreducibly strange to the world. And we as Christians shouldn't be getting bent out of shape about that. It comes with a territory. And what I'm trying to say is the ultimate reason why the world is upset at us is because inexplicable. They can't understand us. They can't understand what we value. They can't understand how very different we are. If you've read The Lord of the Rings, if you've seen the movies, you really haven't seen the ending, because the ending goes on for chapter after chapter after chapter. The third book, the ending takes up like half of the third book, and it goes on forever. And it involves Frodo and his friends coming back to the Shire. They've been gone away. They've had new adventures. They've met people. They've done things. They've been places. They come back to the Shire. They're looking so forward to coming back to home. And they come back home, and they find that everything has changed. Everything is different. Because they've had experiences and they've met things and they've met these people from the other side of the sea who are so very different. And the people of the Shire look at Frodo and his friends and they can't understand them either. Something strange has happened. Something different about these people. And for us as believers in Jesus Christ, we've met someone. And our values have been changed and our hearts different. And so how does Daniel function in a foreign land, which he makes home, while dealing with this hostile attitude toward his faith? Basically, two ways. Number one, he lives as a pilgrim. He lives as a pilgrim. It's a very difficult thing to be far away from your true home and yet to pour your life and your heart into the place where God puts you. But Daniel never lost sight of his true home, Jerusalem. The Bible uses a lot of terms to describe a Christian's relationship to this world. Peter calls us sojourners and exiles. We're temporary residents. And so Daniel's content to spend his whole life investing in this place if necessary. But he's not really home. The Apostle Paul says, while we're here, we live in this tent, this body. Our permanent home is being built for us by God. We long for that. And Daniel, living as a pilgrim, looking three times a day for Jerusalem, his heart yearns for the city of God. So he lives as a pilgrim. And number two, he refuses to compromise his spiritual disciplines. In spite of all the pressure on him, Daniel would not pretend that he was something that he was not, godless. Daniel refused to become a complainer. He refused to become a victim. Look at his prayer life. I mean, here's Daniel. He's about to become cat food, and he's giving thanks to his God. Daniel refused to become a secret believer. Everyone knows what he stands for, and he is going to obey the law of God, even if it cost him his life. So let's not miss the obvious application here. There needs to be, in all of our lives as Christians, the establishment of patterns, disciplines, practices, private and public, which allow us to come into the reality of God's presence. The only way you are going to survive in this secular world is if you are regularly, fruitfully meeting with the true God of heaven. Daniel consistently, persistently sought out God. And that's why God changed him. That's why God gave him faith. That's why God transformed him in this very difficult place. He was distinctively godly in an extraordinarily difficult place. He loved God. He loved God's word. He loved God's people. And you cannot possibly walk into a shop or into an office or into a classroom where people scoff at grace and take the Lord's name in vain and exalt human wisdom and laugh at integrity and make purity and righteousness to be a joke and expect to keep your own spiritual integrity if you don't have this pattern in your life. If you're not consistently meeting with God and meeting God in His Word. One writer remarks that Daniel's bedroom was the real lion's den. That's where the real battle was fought. And that's where the real battle was won. By committing himself continually to prayer, he won the only battle that really, really mattered. So Daniel was missional living missionally without assimilating. What does that mean? What's the lesson that we ought to carry home from this? Number three, Daniel points to ultimate rescue. Now, here at the Daniel in the Lion's Den, I mean, you talk about the great story of the Old Testament. Seems like everybody knows this one. It's so famous, and we love this story. You've probably heard it somewhere. You may have heard it in Sunday school growing up. The problem is that so many people, if not most people, totally miss the point of this story. Isn't that cool? Wow, God shut the mouths of the lions. Therefore, the moral of the story is that if you are good, if you trust God, God will take care of you too. So why don't you be courageous? Because God will take care of you. That's the moral of the story, right? Well, I know some good people, and I know some righteous people, and I know some moral people that have lost their lives, and the lions ate them up. What do you do with that? If the writer of this story put this in the Bible so that you would know that if you are innocent and if you are good and if you trusted God, not a scratch, nothing bad would ever happen to you, no wonder a lot of people aren't Christians today. I mean, does that really work? No. That's not what Christianity teaches. It might be what you've heard, but it's not the message of Jesus' life. It's not what Christians experience in real life. The gospel of Jesus Christ is not believe and obey me and I will give you a good life. That's moralism. That's legalism. That's paganism. That's not the gospel. I know somebody who trusted God a whole lot more than Daniel. I know somebody who was also thrown into a den. I know somebody who also had a stone rolled over him, and I know that he was filled with wounds. There are lots of scratches on him. There are all kinds of terrible things happened to him. You see, Jesus Christ didn't come to rescue good people. He didn't come to rescue righteous people. He didn't come to rescue moral people. He even said, I'm a physician. I've come not for the righteous, but for sinners. I'm a physician. He came for the sick. So it doesn't work to make Daniel into some kind of moral example. You know, be like Daniel and you'll be okay. So what is it all about? It's here for two reasons. The story's here for two reasons. Number one, rescue waits for us in the future. Rescue waits for us in the future. This rescue of Daniel in the lion's den is a miracle. It's a flat-out miracle, pure and simple. And all of the Bible's miracles point to a greater miracle yet to come. The miracles of the Bible are in here to show us the salvation. They're supposed to show us the gospel. In other words, the miracles of the Bible, when the hungry are fed and when the lepers are healed and when the blind see, they're not ultimately primarily suspensions of natural order. They're restorations of natural order. They're God turning things back to what the natural order ought to be before things were broken. In the miracles, God is showing us what he wants the world to be like. This is what the world will be like when I fix it. There'll be no sick people. There'll be no blind people. There'll be no lepers. There'll be no dead people when I fix the world. This is what he originally wanted the world to be like, and this is what the world is going to be like again. So you see 80-year-old Daniel, he's an old guy, 80-year-old Daniel walking in with the lions, petting them, and their mouths are shut. So what are we being told about? We're being told that one day God is going to bring about Isaiah 11, verses 6 and 7. The wolf will live with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the goat. The calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. When you read the Psalms in Psalm 7, Psalm 10, Psalm 57, over and over and over again, the roaring lions are a symbol of the disharmony of nature and its sufferings and danger. Isaiah 11 says, someday, however, God is going to wipe this place clean. The universe is going to be restored, and there will be nothing but harmony. There will be nothing but peace, and our bodies will work right, and nature will work right, and there won't be any disease, and there won't be any death. And those of us whose bodies are not working right, or maybe you've gotten bad news from the doctor, the first thing Daniel points to is that a new heaven and a new earth and the city of God is all a foretaste of God's kingdom. This is what's coming. This is what's going to happen for all of us. So how do I know if this awesome future is for me? Number two, rescue has already been done for us. What does Daniel say to the king? The king says, oh my goodness, how did this happen? What does he say to the king? He says, oh king, live forever. My God sent his angel. Now that's strange. Who is this angel character? Who's this man? Who is this person? You remember Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Daniel chapter 3, this guy, this angel in the furnace, and now he's into the lion's den. Who is this guy? I'll tell you who I believe he literally is, or at least who he points to. There is somebody else who was thrown into a tomb, who was sealed over with a rock, but he came out. Why? Here's why. The Bible tells us in Psalm 22 what the Messiah is going to say from the cross. Psalm 22 predicting what Messiah would say from the cross 1,000 years in advance. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? All who see me mock me. They hurl insults saying, he trusts in the Lord, but the Lord will not rescue him. Roaring lions open their mouths wide against me. You lay me in the dust of death. Roaring lions does not represent general suffering. But in the Old Testament, roaring lions represents the justice of God. Go to the book of Amos. The lion roars against violence and oppression. Here's what this means. The real Daniel, who went into the real lion's den, who went before the real lions, the justice of God, who got the punishment that we all needed, was ruined. He was torn by the justice of God. The real Daniel, who went into the real lion's den, was Jesus Christ. And because he was the ultimate Daniel who went before the ultimate lions, we now can go into whatever our little lion's dens are with confidence. Why? Here's the reason why. I can only deal with disease that comes into my life if I know that the ultimate disease, sin and death, has been dealt by him in the ultimate lion's den. I can only deal with debt if I know that he has paid my ultimate debt in the ultimate lion's den. I can only deal with loneliness in my life if I know that he faced ultimate loneliness in the ultimate lion's den for me. He was thrown away from God. I will never be thrown away from God because he was thrown away, because he was cut off, because he was thrown into that ultimate lion's den. I am never going to have to experience anything like that. Therefore, I can truly be Daniel. You know what Daniel means? The word Daniel means my judge is God. God is my judge. I don't care what you think. I don't care what anybody thinks. Roar all you want, lions. The only lions that can really kill me, Jesus Christ took. And you'll never be able to get out of the lion's dens of this world until you realize what the ultimate Daniel did for you. Do you understand that in the end? Do you believe it? Can you live like that? if you can live and walk boldly and confidently, knowing that Jesus Christ bore my lions for me, and Jesus Christ took my curse for me, and he took the wrath of God for me, then you can go out into the world and live missionally. You can go out into this world and not assimilate into this world, but to be a light, to be salt, to be attractive, to be godly, to trust God. So we come to the Lord's table. Daniel means, my judge is God. And this table means the judge came down off the bench and he paid my penalty. He took my shame. He took my humiliation, my sin, at ultimate cost to himself. The new covenant was initiated by Jesus Christ at the cross. And we're coming to the Lord's table. And this is a place where Christians, if you know Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, you're welcome to share with us. This is a place where Christians who know Christ, who love Christ, join together to celebrate that my judge has taken the judgment himself and he has set me free in a new covenant of God's grace to walk in liberty before him. And if you know Jesus Christ and you love him, won't you come together with us at the Lord's table and we'll share. Let's stand together.